ThisEpicLife.com presents The Manifesto. Defining our non-negotiables. Non-negotiable number two, vitality. It's interesting how our fundamental needs are the first to get the axe whenever we're clamoring for more, more, more. If soul powers the experience, it's our vitality that dictates whether we'll even be able to pull it off. If you've made it this far, you probably have all sorts of stuff in your life that make you feel alive. For vitality, I'm referring to physical well-being and the simple things we can do to maximize it. To do so, we're going to need to confront the two arch nemeses of the modern American way of life. One, diet, and two, physical exercise. Part one, diet. Who doesn't love the euphoria of sitting at your computer on a Friday morning, jacked up on coffee and donuts, firing off witty zingers to clients and coworkers? It's all that sitting in sugar that inevitably have us circling the drain, though, before eating out for lunch and face-planting into that hellish mid-afternoon lull. No wonder our moods swing so violently. I'm grateful to have realized the levels to which food and drink affect my mental, spiritual, and emotional clarity. It helps me make smart choices more often than not, all in the interest of maximizing vitality. My mom always insisted on cooking from scratch and would never let us spend money on fast food or candy. This created an interesting duality in my approach to food. My wife would argue it turned me into a high and mighty health food purist in public who then binges on junk food in filthy secrecy, usually in my car. I often emerge from road trips wearing a Cheetos mustache, and for some reason a monocle. All of my experimentation with different bodily fuel, early on it was two Whoppers for $2 in college, then vegetarianism, later on veganism, pH miracle high alkaline diet, and these days raw juicing, etc., it's led me to one very simple conclusion. If it makes you feel like shit, do not eat it. If it makes you feel great, do your best to eat more of it. The key here is to consciously pay attention to how food affects you and your energy level. Every person's constitution is unique, and although we would probably evolve a lot faster as a species as raw juicing vegans, potentially becoming telepathic in the process, I can see where it isn't for everybody. It bugs me when people assume that something healthy tastes gross while they're crushing a bag of sugar-dipped cheesy poofs in a beer. Just because it looks like pond water doesn't mean it tastes like it. To them, I say, nothing tastes as good as amazing feels. To which they may argue, well, nothing feels as good as amazing tastes. Hey, I'm jealous of your cheesy poofs. My mom never let me have those. They've always been delicious, but they also left me feeling like a guilty, boiled turd. In the end, if you truly care about vitality, you have to agree that feeling trumps taste. If you discover foods that both taste great to you and make you feel great over the long term, eat those. If we're both trim and feeling great, we're not going to waste time arguing over what to eat. We'll be too busy dancing and practicing grand entrances like fierce runway models. Part 2, physical exercise. Last Saturday, I took my daughter to karate. There were the usual demo and training videos looping to entertain the parents. In the videos, the students were doing all sorts of insane ninja-like jumps and kicks, shredding the bo staff and nunchucks. I was riveted. I was sort of jealous I was never exposed to something like that as a kid, but it probably would have cut into my precious Legend of Zelda quest. Between loops of the DVD flashed a powerful message. If you own a body, you are an athlete. This made so much sense. I was angry I never heard this as a kid. Lettering in track or wrestling doesn't make you an athlete. Possessing natural ability in throwing a football or swinging a bat doesn't make you an athlete. Thank God, because I can't throw a football. Choosing to put your God-given body to work through physical activity makes you an athlete. It's an in-the-moment choice to shake a leg, to spaz out and move, or to fire up your human mechanism and move some energy around. Don't get me wrong, I know absolutely zero about professional sports or sports-related matters. When I've had to take clients to sporting events, my cheer is always, go sports! But because of my lens, I have mad respect for athletes and their superhuman powers. They are physical proof of the evolution of the species. The irony is that although I picked up a few instruments as a kid and quickly gained some proficiency, I never thought it made me a musician. My time spent mastering the language of music and creating music made me a musician. It was my conscious choice to show up day after day, either to rehearsals or to the woodshed, honing my chops and memorizing scales. But I never understood this as it related to being athletic. My brother was the athlete, I was the musician. This made it much easier for my parents to tell us apart. It would take us decades before my brother picked up a guitar or I laced up my running shoes. Shortly before I turned 30, I moved to Chicago with my wife and a 3-month-old daughter. I had no job to support us, and we had to pay our health insurance out of pocket. Part of my Category 5 hell-bent on reinvention strategy was to get in shape. I worked out sporadically over the years, mostly to barely maintain my metrosexual skinny jeans physique. Something about running always appealed to me. It had to either be the shoes, shorts, or taut thighs, because honestly, the act of running looked damn taxing and painful. One morning, I threw on some crappy old sneakers and ran down the street. By the end of the block, I was hurting, but turned right anyway and headed east towards the lake. I knew from my walks to the train, it was exactly a mile from our street to the shore. There was a light at Clark, thank God. I swallowed my lungs back down and pressed on another 3 blocks before walking. The next day, I made it 6 blocks, then 10 blocks, then finally to the shore by the weekend. I wanted to shout it from every corner like an old-timey paperboy. Musician and decidedly non-athletic Christopher Carter ran an entire mile. I told anyone who would listen. Most didn't. That first mile stands as one of my greatest physical achievements, ahead of numerous half and full marathons and the hundreds, wow, thousands of training miles I've run since. There wasn't any crowd, any glory, or free Gatorade. I was just far beyond my comfort zone, relying on myself to dispel the bullshit myth I learned as a kid, that I wasn't the athlete. That first mile ignited my obsession to chase the dragon down every street in Chicago, to circulate more blood and oxygen, to cover more ground, to percolate more profound creative thought, to transmute any nonsensical emotional pain into visceral physical pain, to transcend my human machine by working sympathetically with it. So when people tell me they aren't runners or athletes, I say neither am I. It's a choice you make in the moment to move that body and shake that ass. The longer I run, bike, and exercise, the more inseparable it becomes from my spiritual soul practice, as well as my creativity. The best days of my life have followed runs I initially resisted. The oxygen and scenery got me out of bed, then the serotonin and adrenaline sustained me, returning with too many personal, spiritual, and creative realizations to list here. My summer runs finish with my sweaty, grinning mess lying on my back in the front yard, feeling my entire life breathe in sync with a cloud-filled sky. The kids climb all over me, no doubt excited by the old man's vitality. Hey everybody, this is KC, and I wanted to start by personally thanking you for listening this far. This is section 2 of the manifesto, which is vitality, which, you know, we're made to think is a very complex subject in our culture, you know, around diet and physical exercise. The reason that it's evolved that way is, as we know, is mostly marketing. You know, everybody is trying to get inside our bellies and tell us what's healthy for ourselves, when the truth is, it's a very simple subject. It's a matter of listening to yourself and paying attention to what makes you feel like shit or what makes you feel great. And nobody expects you to be perfect with this stuff. I don't know anyone, all my vegan friends, all my, you know, triathlete friends, nobody has a perfect diet. They all enjoy their beers. They all love their candies and their sweets. So it's just a matter of navigating more towards those things that make you feel good and less towards the things that make you feel like crap over the long term. So in terms of diet, and I don't even like to really use the D word. Let's call it bodily fuel, not fluid, bodily fuel. So in choosing bodily fuel, there's 2 things that we can do that'll really simplify this subject. The first one is to consciously pay attention to how the food affects you. So rather than create this like elaborate food journal where you write down everything and you lie to yourself and then you hate yourself later for bullshitting what you wrote down, let's just start to consciously pay attention to the cycles we go through during the day. The easiest one to identify is the mid-afternoon lull. I don't know about you, but I usually get pretty low between like the hours of 2 and 3:30 p.m. And it's usually a direct result of, you know, sitting on my butt at a computer most of the day and then eating something during lunch that's carb heavy or sugar heavy or something that my body needs to recover from. Start with those points in the day where you just feel vulnerable. You feel tired or worn out, and pay attention to what you ate you know, kind of preceding that time. In terms of journaling that, I would just kind of reverse engineer like how you got there to that point. Start with the mid-afternoon lull. Start at that point before dinner where the kids are running around, biting your ankles, and everyone's kind of antsy and you're just kind of tense getting the food together. Did you eat something that nourished you between the afternoon lull and dinner time? Pay attention to those points, and I think you'll start to see some patterns in terms of what you eat and how it affects you. Step two, I would highly recommend checking out one of my friend's sites. I usually don't just shamelessly plug a friend's site, but my friend, her name is Karen Friend Smith. How ironic is that? She has a site called thekitchenskinny.com, and her husband went through a total transformation just by changing up the way they eat. And if you meet Karen, she just glows. You know, her skin is amazing. Her energy level and vitality is just beaming. And I really think she's onto something with The Kitchen Skinny. So her newsletters offer a lot of support for just how to be, you know, more conscious about what you feed yourself and your family, how to plan family dinners that are healthy, how to steer more towards a heavy vegetable diet. You know, she's not a purist. She's not all about like, oh, meat is the devil or, you know, this is the devil. It's more so just making better choices like what we're talking about. And she's definitely more of an authority than I am. So check out thekitchenskinny.com. Okay, that leaves us with physical activity. How do we build some practice and some consistency around just moving our body around and getting all these great chemicals, these natural chemicals inside our body flowing? I think it starts with determining what in business and entrepreneurship is called the minimum viable product. That's the product that we crank out as quickly and as fast and inexpensively as possible just to start getting some market feedback and some results in some fashion. So let's determine what that is in terms of our physical practice. For me, years ago, it was running. Can I just move my legs in a faster motion than walking for, you know, X amount of blocks? For a lot of people, this is just getting up and walking, finishing up your soul practice or combining it with your soul practice in the morning, practicing gratitude while you're just walking around the block, taking your dog for the walk, getting up from your desk and consciously walking out the front door, walking around the perimeter of your building, just kind of stretching out your back, stretching out your legs and getting back in there. Because by starting with the minimum viable product, it kind of saves us what most people go through, which is setting their ambitions way too high and saying, oh, if I'm going to start exercising, then I'm running a marathon. If I'm going to start lifting, then I'm going to, you know, do P90X for 90 days. I mean, all those things are great. And I don't want to take anything away from them. And I honestly believe you can do those things. But in terms of building some momentum and proving to yourself that you are the type of person that will move your body on a consistent basis, start small, but don't overcommit. Once you have that thing in place, now it's just a matter of how consistently can you do this thing? Can you do it a few times a day? Can you do it once a day, three times a week, five times a week? Like set that minimum consistency standard along with the practice. Then you'll start seeing some wins. You'll start feeling like the person that comes through and actually commits to these things and finishes them. That's where you build on the miles, build on the pace, build on the intensity of it. Very simple. What's the basic thing we can do? And then part two, how consistently can you do it? All right then, you know I believes in you, right? You're the type of person that can do this stuff. I will see you in the next segment.
Thanks for checking out this Epic Life podcast. You can subscribe to future episodes on iTunes. Hit us up on Twitter at This Epic Life. And for exclusive content, including outtakes from the manifesto, please visit thisepiclife.com. You can sign up in the upper right. Namaste.